We are waking up to something in this country, maybe to something we don't want to be awakened to, something that gives us discomfort, that challenges us to see differently than we would like to see them. There's a knock at the door of our conscience, and we don't really want to open the door because when we do, we'll see a different world than what we'd like to see. But the knock is getting louder, the cry to wake up more persistent, requiring us to awaken our senses, our reason, our compassion, our conscience, our vision. That is what this church and churches like it ask of you. That is what the provocative words Black Lives Matter ask of you. Let us pray in this time of worship that we can be awake, we can hear the cry, but more than that, that we can hear with new ears and see with new eyes both the struggle and the hope for racial equality. You know, sometimes kids see things clearer and express things more clearly than adults do. This week, thanks to Jolene introducing it to me, I saw a couple of videos of a middle school boy by the name of Royce Mann, reading his poetry, two poems in particular, one called White Boy Privilege and the other called All Lives Matter But. Part of those poems weren't age appropriate for all our group here, but I wanted to share part of it that was. Some of those poems are written by, someone the age or even a little younger than some of you here today. So I want to just share a couple of parts of them, and then we'll stop and have a couple of questions to discuss. And this is truly a message for all ages. So although I really look forward to our youth participating, adults are more than welcome to respond as well. His poem begins, "Dear Black people, dear Native Americans, dear Asian Americans, dear immigrants who came here to seek a better life, I'm sorry. Dear whoever isn't a middle or upper class white boy, I'm sorry. I started life on the top of the ladder, while you were born on the first rung. I'm not saying that you and me on different rungs is how I wanted to stay. I'm not saying that any part of me ever liked it that way. I'm scared of what it would be like if I wasn't on the top rung, if the tables were turned and I didn't have my white boy safety blankie to protect me. When I was born, a success story was already written for me. You were given a pen with no paper. I always felt that wasn't fair, but I never dared to speak up. But now I realize there's enough blankie to be shared. Everyone should have the privilege that I have. In fact, they should be rights instead. Everyone's story should be written, so all they have to do is get it read. Take courage, my soul, and let us journey on. Though the night is dark and we are far from where we should be on the issue of racism in this country, but thanks be to God, the morning light appears. I do believe the morning light is starting to appear, but you know it's also darkest before the dawn, isn't it? And this week was a tough week. There was the shooting of Terrence Crutcher in Tulsa, a Black man whose car broke down in the middle of the road. He was the father of four children. He'd gone back to school to study music. He was a gospel singer. I bet he even sang "The Storm is Passing Over." He was committed to his Christian faith. He was on his way back from his college music classes when his car broke down. He was hoping to get help from the police and doing everything that a Black man should do when confronted by the police, hands over his head, leaning on the car. So where did the statement that the officer in the helicopter broadcast to the other police saying he was a bad dude come from. Not from the facts. The only place it could really have come from is a racist frame of mind. A racism that is embedded in some police officers and some police departments and criminal justice institutions, but also in the fabric of our society. So deeply that we often don't even know it's operating. But that had to be what was happening when that black man was shot dead by Officer Betty Shelby, who said she was never more afraid in her life. That doesn't make sense when you see the video. What caused her to be irrationally afraid? The same thing that caused the officer in the helicopter to call him a bad dude. Deeply embedded racism that causes white privileged Americans to act in ways that demonstrate time and time again that black lives don't matter in the same way white lives do. My heart breaks for the family of this man, shot for no reason by those who should have been helping him. And my heart breaks for that woman officer who was so tainted and shaped by our racist society that it caused her to see aggression in the innocent moves of this black man, who was so afraid by it in that moment that she committed a horrible act, and now charged with first-degree manslaughter, her life too is ruined. It was awful to see the video. Hard to believe such a blatantly racist miscarriage of justice could happen. I am sure that it was horribly difficult for the Tulsa police to release it to the public, knowing that it puts the actions of their force and their co-workers in a very negative light. I applaud their courage, their transparency, their non-denial. Truth-telling and honesty are the first steps towards healing. Take courage, my soul, and let us journey on. For the night is dark, and we are far from where we should be on this issue of race. But thanks be to God, the morning light, I think, is just starting to appear. Also this week, another man, Keith Lamont Scott, was shot by police in North Carolina. He was a disabled security guard and father of 7 kids. His family says when this happened, he was waiting to pick up his son from school. There was no bad blood with the police here. But one side says there was a gun and the other says no gun. And we have not seen all the police video. Some was just released, but none for a while. But before that, we saw the most disturbing video shot on someone's cell phone, where we hear the man's wife pleading with police not to shoot him, telling the police he does not have a gun, telling them he suffers from a traumatic brain injury and is on medication. It's also said that some of the body cameras of the police officers at that scene were not on. And why was that? The withholding of videos, the shutting off of official police cameras that should be recording in an incident like this gives the appearance of a cover-up, or worse, a pattern of police behavior that says that black lives don't matter, that there is a different standard in the minds of police for shooting a black person than for shooting a white person. I want you to ask yourself this question. If it was a white wife who was pleading with the police and telling them her white husband didn't have a gun and that her white husband had a brain injury and was on medication, do you believe he would have been shot? Why is there unrest in Charlotte? Why are there people in the streets? Not just because another black man was shot by police, but because there is a rising sentiment that our police departments, our criminal justice system, our institutions, are racist to the core and will try to cover it up when it's manifested. The police distrust the community and the community distrusts the police. There is great pain and anger in the black community, and truth-telling has to be the first step towards a cure. You know, folks, most of you know I was an assistant district attorney for many years. I understand a bit about this law enforcement thing. Sometimes you do want to hold back on the release of a video until you get everyone on the record so their stories aren't influenced by what's on the video. But you can do that quickly. But even more importantly, if you do hold back on a video and not release it for any time, you don't then go tell the public that these are the facts and you have them and that you've reviewed the tape and it supports your theory of the case, but you're not going to let anybody else see the tape. The trustworthiness of the police in this situation is gone in the eyes of those people in the street. There is nothing that at this point that will be compromised in this investigation by releasing all the video, and there's some to be gained by doing what the Tulsa police did, release the video. You know, I know police officers worry that they may not get a fair shake or fair trial if they're charged or that the evidence might be misinterpreted. Well, you know what? That is exactly what's been happening to black men in this country for a long time. There is a storm passing over Charlotte right now, but as far as the officials, at least thus far, are doing, they've pretty much failed to let the morning light in, the light that reveals the truth, all the truth that leads to justice, that leads to healing, that leads to meaningfully addressing institutional racism. That light isn't being let out. You know, when I started writing this sermon several weeks ago, it had not been my intent to start with the news of the week. But how could I not? Because this week's news states more clearly than I could in words why that banner hangs in front of our church. The events of this week reminds us that as a nation and as a people of faith, we are going to have to proclaim that Black Lives Matter for quite a while before we can get to the point where we can honestly say that all lives matter. Since I've been the minister of this church now 15 years, and before my time, we have proclaimed in many ways that we are a church that affirms the inherent worth and dignity of every person. We've not just said, well, all lives matter, and left it at that, because there were groups of people who were being treated in ways that indicated our society felt that their lives mattered less than the lives of others. We've done this for gay, lesbian, and transgender folks. We've done it for the abused, for those who have mental or physical challenges. And we have been on a journey addressing white privilege and racial disparity in this country for a while. It's not been an easy journey that led us to hang that sign. It's not been some uninformed whim, some jump on the liberal religious bandwagon without doing our homework, as a few critics of the banner in our community have alleged. No, we've done our homework. We listened and read. We shared deeply and honestly. Some of us had volunteered in communities of color and learned firsthand what it's like to be a black teenage boy or the mother of one. We've struggled with tough issues, and it's been a long journey. And do you know what we learned on that journey? In case you don't remember, let me refresh your memory. We learned from a national study that young black males have a 21-time greater risk of being shot dead by police than their white counterparts. And as Michelle Alexander points out in the book that many of us read together, for those not killed in the streets, the likelihood of incarceration for black men is astronomical. 3 out of 4 black men will serve time. The United States imprisons a larger percentage of its black population than South Africa did at the height of apartheid. And even though statistics show that whites and blacks use and sell drugs at very similar rates, blacks go to jail far more often for it. In some states, 20 and even 50 times more often. All our learning points to one place. We have moved beyond the point where we can any longer see these killing of black men as isolated incidents or incidents explainable in non-racist terms. No more explaining away or denying the obvious. We feel now the connection between these horrible events, and we know we cannot block our ears and eyes and remain silent. And that's why that banner is hanging out there. Ours has been a journey of waking up to the fact that seeing the world through the blinders of white privilege, we have deceived ourselves. We have, to one extent or another, probably bought into this idea that with a black president, we live in a post-racial world, that there had been the struggles and sure, maybe a few little pockets of racism here and there, but for the most part, it was over. We're waking up to the fact that our law enforcement system, be it at the level of the police on the street, or the level of prosecutorial decision-making, or the level of grand jury deliberation, or the level of trial and sentencing after trial, or the level of our prisons, it's all tainted by racism. And that's why we hang that banner out there. And folks, it's not the banner of some other organization that we just hung up to be nice. No, it's our banner. It represents our faith. Note that it's different from other Black Lives banners when you see it. The message incorporates a sketch of a yellow heart, a Unitarian Universalist symbol for our Standing on the Side of Love campaign. It does not reflect membership in some other organization, but it does state that we stand in solidarity with folks of color who through the years and still today are treated in ways that demonstrate that their lives are valued less than white folks. We don't hang other people's banners on our church. We only hang the message that this faith tradition, and in particular this church, owns. Now that doesn't mean that everyone agrees that it should be there. But the reason I can say it's our message, one that we own, is not because every single person wanted it there. It's not because it came from outside or was supposed to be imposed upon us by our denomination. It's not because I wanted it there. To the contrary, after much learning and sharing and discussion, the hanging of this banner was approved at an official, well-attended meeting of this congregation where every member had the right to speak and vote, and they did. It was a good discussion. People voiced their concerns, and many people with different views were respectfully heard. And that's why that banner hangs in front of the church. To those of you who had reservations and may have voted against it, your participation was important. Your views provided a balance that led us all to deeper reflection. And thank you for your courage, and thank you for staying with us and continuing your participation in a great institution that sometimes, no matter where you stand, might not reflect every one of your personal views. What we all need to come to terms with is that certain kinds of racism still permeate our society. You know, the civil rights movement of the 60s moved us to let go of racism at an intellectual level. Overt racism, the kind that's codified into laws or government policy, is gone. But the civil rights movement of the 60s did not bridge the differences and develop a true emotional and spiritual understanding of the equal worth and dignity of folks of color. We did not dismantle racism at the deeper emotional level. We'd like to think we did, but we didn't. It's still there at the level of our fears. It is in the part of our brain that guides us, especially at the level of split-second decisions, the kind police officers make all the time. But let me pause here to say, I am not in any way condemning police officers. I'm not saying their jobs are easy. I'm not saying that every encounter on the street can be diffused without an officer firing a gun. I'm not overlooking the fact that there are real dangers to police officers and that we rely on police officers for our protection. As a prosecutor, I spent nearly 10 years of my life working with them. And I know, and I know they have protected me, and I know of the good work they do. And we are all, without reservation, condemn the retaliation against police, the killing of police officers by individuals who claim to be acting on this idea that this is some way an expression of Black Lives Matter. You know what happened this summer in Dallas and elsewhere has to be condemned. But it is no reason that we should take down the statement of faith that hangs out there, the application of our first principle that hangs on the front of the church. Sadly, there are disturbed individuals who, in emotionally charged times, commit horrible acts in the name of good causes, and it gives haters of that message ammunition to try and discredit the movement that's sweeping the country. Let me ask you a question. If someone committed a horrible act and said, "The reason I did so was because I'm a Unitarian Universalist," would we take down the sign for our church? Would we be judged responsible? No, you say. That sign says who we are. Well, I hope that other sign says who we are too. It's troubling to see what's going on. Many are angry, and it's easy to project that anger on the police and blame them for all the problems of racism. But the truth is, it's not just the police or the department that trained them and sent them out on the street with the wrong kind of training and the wrong kind of orders who bear the responsibility for the acts of racism. All of us white folks collectively bear some blame. As privileged white folks, we are in part responsible for the racist struggles of our times. We have not done enough to enforce the message that Black lives matter. We need to accept some responsibility for the racism in our society. You know, young black men that are on the streets, they're there because they don't have jobs and proper educational opportunities. We need to acknowledge that collectively, we have in fact created a racial underclass of people who are not treated as we are by police officers or courts or other branches of the government. And that's why you voted to hang that banner in front of the church. We need to look deep in ourselves, and we need to think about what we can do to change first ourselves and then our society and our institutions. These protests going on now in Charlotte and many places in the U.S. are not going away, nor should they. This is not an issue for the Black community to solve. It is very much our issue, too. In the words of Martin Luther King Jr., "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." And that's why that banner hangs in front of this church. Yes, a few people from the greater community have disliked the banner. He even demanded we take it down. They've advanced conspiracy theories. Some have said hate-filled racist things. Some have called us unkind names. And I know this has made some of you uncomfortable and concerned. Yes, we could have steered clear of this issue, as some churches did. And now we could respond to those couple of voices by quietly taking down the banner and letting the voices of hate win. But if we, as the liberal religious institution in this community, don't have the courage to speak out when it is so clear that our society is not living up to the first and maybe most fundamental principle of our faith, then why are we here? You know, I've also had other kinds of comments about our banners too, and they don't get bantered around on websites and email discussion groups, but you should know about them too. One person said, "When I drive by your church, it reminds me that we all need to stand against racism." Another said, "I wish my church would do that." And you know what? Many have. I believe most Unitarian Universalist churches have a similar banner to ours. And I was driving by St. Matthew's Methodist Church in Acton the other day, and guess what I saw? A Black Lives Matter banner on the front of their church. We're not alone. There are hundreds of churches, maybe thousands, that have Black Lives Matter banners. Many like ours, with symbols of their faith tradition on them, tying the message of their teachings to that message. You know, when a church does this, it reminds people that these words come from a place of religious conviction. And that is why our banner and all those banners in front of all kinds of churches hang. The storm is passing over, but it's far from gone. But the Black Lives Matter movement has given us a new place to start addressing the structural racism that still permeates our societies and institutions. The more I engage with racism, the more deeply embedded I find it to be. But I take new hope from things that are happening right now. Yesterday, did you see it? Two presidents, Bush and Obama, spoke at the dedication of the National Museum of African American History and Culture. And what an uplifting event that was, and an affirmation of the work of all those who have and still do struggle against racism. Both of those presidents made the same point. A great nation does not shy away from the truth. And that's why we hang that banner in front of our church. We're still on the journey, but I'm hopeful the light is more than ever shining in. Take courage, my soul, and let us journey on. For the night is dark, and we are still far from being a country where all lives matter equally. But the morning light is beginning to appear. This is the next chapter of the civil rights movement. It will be a long journey, but I do believe we are marching, and we shall overcome someday.